really enjoy that process of just getting quotes that are very revealing about how they feel about a particular product, especially if they have very strong opinions. And that's all really good material for then kind of playing back to stakeholders. And the team really believes in human-centered design, or are at least pretty keen to kind of hear directly from users. So I've been running a few user interviews for that.
Hello, you've reached Hotline Design Podcast. How may we help you? Welcome back to Hotline Design Podcast. In this week's episode, we talk all about user interviews, the process, our experiences, and 10 terrific top tips to make sure you ace your next one. So Lavinia, Yusin, how have your weeks been?
Not so bad, actually. I thoroughly enjoyed my week this week. At work, I'm doing a project that is a bit more on the analytics side. I've been brought in to just basically do a Hotjar and Google Analytics analysis for a client, which we never done before where we're coming from. At least I haven't, just because we, like, our clients usually didn't give us access to that kind of stuff. So it's really cool to kind of see user behavior from a quantitative side. Although I obviously still maintain that, even though you see what people are doing, it's really important to find out why as well through qualitative measures. But yeah, really cool. And then personally, I'm focusing on running because my half marathon is coming up in May and I feel I'm prepared. But other than that, all bueno. How about you?
Yeah, my week's been pretty good. I guess I'm just kind of soldiering on in my project. Started doing a lot of screen designs and yeah, basically just trying to put together some designs so I can hand it off to the developer. I've kind of been agonizing a lot about the actual design process because I like to try and have some degree of control over the projects I'm working on. So I've kind of mapped out this whole roadmap for how I want to deliver this piece of work. But then I'm now realizing that nothing flows in a linear way. You have to kind of think about what your stakeholders want and make sure you set up sessions with them and then kind of go back into it and work on the designs. And yeah, I think there's a bit of uncertainty at the moment, but I'm sure it'll get better. I think I've just been a bit like tired. I swear I was on a call today and it was quite late in the day, and halfway when I was speaking I was just like, what am I even saying? Like, this makes no sense. But yeah, just kind of soldiering on with work. And aside from that, just been, I think, trying to chill a bit more in the evenings. So just been watching a lot of Netflix. I started this series recently. It's called like Lupin on Netflix. It's, I don't know if anyone's heard of it, but it's a French TV series. It's only 5 episodes, so really short but well filmed, and I've had a lot of fun just watching that in the evenings and just kind of relaxing. So yeah, pretty good.
Is that the one with the high stakes like thief?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Watched it.
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah, a few months ago, so the memory of it is not the best, but I remember really enjoying it.
Yeah, it's pretty funny actually. It's a bit like more lighthearted, so yeah, I don't want to watch anything too serious.
My grandmother, who's very hip, actually recommended that I watch it. She loves Netflix.
It is pretty good, yeah. I would recommend it. And what about you, Lauren? How's your week been?
Yeah, my week has been good. My project is kind of coming to an end, so I was in the process of looking for a new role, which is always a bit stressful. You kind of feel like you're trying to like scurry and stay out of danger, out of schedulers' keen eyes. And then when you find something, you kind of have to have certain parties talking to one another. So it's very like, talk to my agent. So you feel like a star, but also a little scared. And then surprise, surprise, I've been doing a bit more packing because I am about a week out from moving. And then in terms of just like creative rabbit holes, I've fallen into a modernist architecture rabbit hole as of late, especially Denis Lauzun. And I love clean lines and chilled wines now. I'm just obsessed with modernist architecture. So yeah, I've just been having fun deep diving on that.
I feel like you could make clean lines and chilled wines your thing. I can totally imagine you cross-stitching that and this piece of white cloth and then framing it in this wooden circle frame and hanging it up for everyone to see.
I feel like people would just think I had a cocaine problem if I did that. Clean wines and chilled wines.
Oh, I get it now.
Oh.
Wait, yeah, that took me a while.
Is this safe for Spotify?
Yeah, you might have to put the explicit label on again.
Yeah. Again, you guys.
Too funny. Well, speaking of things that walk a fine line, we're talking all about user interviews this week. And I just want to know, what are your experiences with user interviews?
I actually really, really love user interviews. I always leave them so kind of like enlightened. I always feel like I get so much energy for what I'm doing as well, because it leaves me with a sense that I'm doing something important. I'm solving a problem for the people I end up talking to. But yeah, to answer your question, my experience started when I was doing a government project, and I'm actually really, really happy about that because they are very thorough in their user research, and I feel like they gave me really good starting points. So it wasn't me initially who was conducting the user interviews. I was kind of brought in as the designer on the project to have insight and also kind of to support the user researchers by taking notes. And it was so enlightening. If any designer out there doesn't have access to like actually going on a user interview rather than reading a transcript, mm-hmm. I can't recommend it enough. Like, I feel like it gives you the kind of tools and almost weapons to articulate your design decisions further. So yeah, that was my initial experience. And then on a following project, I was brought on as a sole UX designer, and I only had 2 weeks to basically redesign an app. And I spent 1 week doing user interviews and basically 1 week redesigning stuff based on what I found. And I would have solved the problems of the users without having talked to them. We had so many assumptions that were completely invalidated in the first week. And since then, I think I kind of, on every project I've been on, I've asked to do user interviews. They are really, really good, in my opinion. So yeah, that's me. What about you?
Yeah, so again, I just definitely agree with everything you said there. I think it's so interesting and really insightful to speak to users, because then it really helps to build empathy when you speak to people to try and understand their experiences from their point of view. I think it's a bit of a tricky one because on the projects I've worked on, we haven't always been allowed to speak to users. Last year, I was doing a short-term project for a university, and I was trying to get access to users to try and validate or test some of the screens we designed with them, but it was just quite difficult to get access to users. So I think in the past I've not always had that sort of unfettered access to speak to actual users on the ground. But on my current project, so I'm working for a financial services organization at the moment, and one of the key pieces of work we're doing is revamping kind of the internal IT support processes and trying to improve the user experience of a support portal that they use within this organization. And it's just been really good because I think the team really believes in human-centered design, or are at least pretty keen to kind of hear directly from users. So I've been running a few user interviews for that. So there are two different portals that I've been working on. For the first portal, I've interviewed about 7 people. And then on the second portal, you know, I've spoken to about 9 people so far, and it's just, I think, always nice to have a chat with people and try and understand where they're coming from, and then also just letting them kind of describe their own frustrations in their own words. And I really enjoy that process of just getting quotes that are very revealing about how they feel about a particular product, especially if they have very strong opinions. And that's all really good material for then kind of playing back to stakeholders and trying to articulate why we need to improve specific features or just improve the design of the site. I think user interviews are a really great way to get that material for convincing your stakeholders why certain design changes are needed. Like you said, Lavinia, you know, it's just really helpful for articulating design decisions.
I almost feel like you can bring any kind of senior stakeholder in into even one user interview sometimes, and I feel like they can get such a different perspective, and they would probably be so much more into the idea of user research afterward.
It's like they were blind and now they see.
Exactly. Yeah, whenever like senior stakeholders are brought into processes, they're always like super engaged and like asking follow-up questions, and it's really cool to see.
Most definitely. User interviews really put the human in human-centered design. I think it's just so enriching, and as you said, Lavinia, becoming kind of energized from getting to talk to users, people on the ground. It's such a nice thing to be able to kind of have in your day job, to really hear people out, to really connect with people, because ultimately, yeah, they are the end user, so it's super important to hear what they have to say. Yeah, I first had experience kind of doing user interviews in my undergrad, because I did health studies and gerontology. I always had to try to get ethics approval to interview older adults, which was always really difficult because they are like a vulnerable population. So not only...
Wait a second. Are they... So just by being older, they're considered vulnerable?
Yeah. So like anyone under the age of like 18 is considered vulnerable. Yep. And anyone like over the age of 60 or 65 is considered vulnerable. So it's additionally difficult to get to talk to them. Mm. So I am experienced in user interviews, but mainly in ethics approval. Kind of going through like in work, I've had the pleasure of having a couple roles where I was doing user interviews. And then in my most recent role, that's been largely user research based, where we haven't had to like rapidly build a prototype or anything. And that's been a real joy. We've done like about 22 interviews over the course of, you know, 4 weeks. And especially in lockdown, it's just been so nice to like connect with someone and they have their video on and they're talking to you. So yeah, it's really helped to combat the loneliness of lockdown.
Any excuse for human interaction, right?
Exactly. I'll take it where I can get it in this economy.
Yeah, and I guess meeting new people, because how else, yeah, you're gonna...
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Exactly. So to ensure that we have fantastic user interviews, we have compiled a list of 10 terrific user interview tips.
Cool. So tip number one, you probably already noticed that I'm very passionate about kind of knowing the high levels of a project first, understanding why something is being built, what was the problem that maybe initially sparked the idea of having this project, who are making the decisions on what the next steps are, blah, 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 blah. So I guess my tip number one is making sure you understand the goals of the project. And then when you are conducting your user research, you write your questions around those goals and making sure that you're not wasting your kind of participants' time by asking irrelevant questions. And equally, you're not wasting your own time but by kind of conducting all these user interviews and not getting the right information. So I think from my perspective, that's probably the most critical thing to ensure that your questions are written around the goals of the project.
And something I've heard as well, like, it's not something I have experience doing, but you know, it can be helpful to write a project or user research brief.
Mm.
So in that vein, I think it kind of helps summarize what your goals are for user interviews. And this is something I only kind of found out about afterwards. Sadly, after I'd done most of my user interviews, I was just looking through the Adobe XD blog and they recommended writing a research guide, or I guess a research brief that summarizes your objectives and what exactly you want to get out of conducting user interviews in there. So it's kind of a North Star almost that you can refer back to.
Definitely. The life of a self-taught designer. Figuring out. I feel like that happens so often when you do something and then you figure out a better way to have done it after you've done it.
I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just being very honest, because I feel like, especially now, this is kind of the first time I've really been on my own on a long-term UX project. And I'm realizing that apart from just doing the designs and wireframes, you know, I've had to do quite a lot of the upfront user research stuff myself, which I wasn't necessarily very skilled in. So Yeah, definitely trying to learn along the way. And the second tip is basically to do user interviews as early on as possible. Generally, we try and follow the double diamond process. So kind of starting off with discover, and user interviews fit quite neatly into that upfront section when you're taking time just to really understand the product that you're designing, understand your users, what their goals are for using your product and their general experience, teasing out what they like about the product and equally thinking about their pain points, which we can then turn into opportunities for improving the product. And so this discover stage is especially crucial when you're trying to find out lots about the product, and user interviews are definitely a key part of that. So if you can get access to users, it would be a really good idea to contact them as early on as possible. And scheduling interviews normally takes some time. So, you know, I think in my experience, I've had to speak to quite a few different people within the company I'm working for. So I've really tried to reach out to them as early on as possible, just in case, you know, they're not available for user interviews. I can kind of run that alongside some of the other work I'm doing, but definitely blocking out some time at the start for running user interviews and doing that discovery process is a good idea.
Definitely. And then tip number three, identify the user's problem. So this is quite in line with like tip one and understanding the goals of the project. So it's really important that you actually kind of pinpoint the user's problems. So one, that your work has purpose, and two, so that you aren't going off of assumptions. The users will be really pissed off if you set off to solve something that wasn't even a problem in the first place. So it takes almost like a bit of research in and of itself to pinpoint the problems. A great place to look is anywhere where people would complain. So Twitter, if it's like a product or service, Google reviews, Facebook, they're all great places to look if you don't have kind of more formal channels to kind of see that collated feedback.
Oh my God. I have a story about complaining on Twitter.
Go
you
on.
See my glasses? So yes. They come.
The listeners at home don't, but they're beautiful.
Thank you. They come with clip-ons, so they become sunglasses. Yeah. So this model is in LARB, and basically, I had a whole nightmare with them. I waited 5 weeks for my eye test, and then I waited 3 weeks for the glasses to come, because when I went to the shop for my eye test, they had a power cut and they had to order them, and they ordered them.
You're literally feeling around in the
dark.
I know.
Yeah. That's me. And then, yeah, they ordered them for me online, but ordering them online means they're coming from Netherlands and we're in the middle of Brexit and they were held at the border. And then they came and I put them on and I was really happy with them. But then I couldn't figure out how to put the clip-ons on. And then I realized they look a bit small. So I was like, okay, so I ordered the Neil large. Do I have the large version of these? And I looked at the receipt and it wasn't. It was the just like regular version. So I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. That's why. Yeah, I emailed them. I called them, nothing. And then I went on Twitter. I basically said, hey guys, I can't reach you anywhere. Can I exchange these in store or do I have to do anything else? And then my partner came and he was playing around with the clips and he put them on and they fit. And I was like, oh no, oh, this no. is the worst. And then I deleted my tweet.
Oh no.
But yeah, look for like people who don't like stuff on Twitter, because that's where we go to complain. And then it's probably our fault. So yeah.
Just like the embarrassment being like, fine, I'll take down my tweets.
Yeah. This is a good segue into also tip number four, and that is creating an interview guide. And I say it's a good segue from kind of problems, because often one of the ways that I kind of structure my interviews are figuring out what currently works with a specific product or service, then figuring out what doesn't work, so the problems that are happening with a specific product or service, and any kind of wishes for the future, which is very much kind of like the rose thorn bud type of approach. And obviously you will have a lot more questions that you want to ask, but I do like to kind of start with those three and making sure that I'm getting those three out of the interview. But yeah, your interview guide can be structured, it can be semi-structured or completely unstructured. You can just kind of like turn up and basically ask initial questions and follow-up questions afterwards. Our recommendation is semi-structured. It's good to go in with a little bit of a logical outline and make sure that you are following our structure. And because I feel like in user interviews, there can often be awkward silences, especially when you don't want to be the user or when they don't know what to tell you and you don't want to fill in the gaps. So having something semi-structured would actually allow you to avoid some of the awkward silences that are not intentional.
Yeah, definitely. And in addition, you can also add prompts under each of your questions. So if you've got your question, your main question written in like black text, I found it really useful to put your prompts in gray text underneath. And they're just kind of a way to dig a little bit deeper on the question or to rephrase the question so that if the user that you're interviewing doesn't really know what to say, you can kind of just quickly go to one of those prompts to kind of ask them a very similar question.
And tip 5 is don't ask leading questions, or try not to, at least. I think this is very applicable to me because I think often we address this just now, but I feel really awkward when there are silences in the conversation and then I tend to try and fill that with more words. But it ends up just sounding like a leading question because I end up suggesting options for what they should say. As much as possible, you know, you want to try and steer clear of that because you don't want to bias the user into saying something so that they agree with you. You kind of want to hear what they genuinely think. For example, if you were to ask them, what do you miss about the office? What I have been consciously trying to do is just pause right after that question and give them time to speak. And if you stay silent, I've realized that they'll take that as a prompt and then they'll respond to that question directly. In the past, I used to say things like, what do you miss about the office? And then when there was a little like awkward silent gap, I'd be like, oh, maybe do you miss seeing people? And that was definitely a leading question. Or another example would be, you were in London last week, weren't you? So almost kind of suggesting or leading them to confirm that they were indeed in London last week. And rather than say something like that, I think we aim to keep it broad so you can ask things like, what is your current working situation? Or how do you feel about your current working situation? So using more what and hows and whys rather than suggesting a specific option that they should go down with.
Most definitely. I think that feeds in really well to tip number 6. Be neutral, be natural. So one of the kind of tips here is to ease people in, kind of ask how they are, kind of do those icebreakers off the top to really kind of set like a very comfortable environment. And then while you're interviewing, be very friendly as though you're encouraging more information, but try not to display too much emotion in that you're like, yes, this is good. Like as you're writing it down, kind of, because then they feel like, oh, is that the right answer? Is that what they want to hear? Or like, don't kind of be like, and like frown when it's like the wrong answer.
That would be me.
There shouldn't be any wrong answers.
Judgmental interviewer.
But,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh, isn't that interesting?
Are you sure about so, that?
Yeah. Oh, really? No. So I find that like pen and paper, head nods and are really good. Like a little to be kind of neutral but natural, to really be engaged in the interview but show that you don't have like a clear position or a clear preference for certain answers.
I have a bit of a, what's it called, resource that I really recommend. It's a 7-minute video on YouTube, and hopefully everyone listening might be used to the design sprint. But basically, the people at Google Ventures have a few videos on YouTube on how to conduct some of their exercises, and one of the videos is about conducting interviews, and there is one gentleman called Michael, I think, if I remember correctly, that is kind of showing how to conduct a user interview. And I think it's so good to see someone super like seasoned with decades of experience and how they're conducting themselves in an interview and how they are making people feel at ease and welcome and basically saying from the start, anything you say is like, no one's gonna judge you. There isn't anything wrong or right that you can say. That soul, like, I actually read user research books, but that 7-minute video has actually been a lot more useful. And if I haven't done a user research interview in a while, I actually go and watch it, like, in the hour before my first user research interview. It's that good, because I think it kind of, like, puts me in the right headspace, and it reminds me of how to, yeah, just make people comfortable. Maybe that says a lot about my awkwardness, but yeah.
No, we love it, like a little
refresher. Yeah, definitely. And another tip we have is to also steer clear from yes or no questions. You'll realize that they aren't very useful for you as well. The purpose of an interview is to get qualitative data, and a yes or no answer is almost quantitative. You can quantify how many people said yes and how many people said no, and it's a lot less useful than you would think. So for example, it's much more useful to ask things like, what kind of emails do you send, rather than do you send emails, or how do you feel about running, rather than do you run? You get a lot more information from your user if you phrase the questions around their experience rather than do you do this or do you like this or things like that.
And our next tip is basically to take note of body language as well. I find this one, honestly speaking, quite difficult, especially now that we're running a lot of user interviews remotely. I think a good tip here is to just let your interviewee know in advance that you'd like to do a video call, so if they're comfortable with that, it's a really helpful way to kind of gauge how someone is feeling about the product. And I think there is a lot of rich information in there as well, so body language can tell you so much more than just the words that are spoken, and it can help you identify some subtle biases, or through body language or gestures or like the way someone smiles or kind of frowns when they're asked to do something. There is a lot of rich information in there that can help you construct that user journey map later on as well. Or even little things like someone kind of sighing, you know, when they're asked to do something or like complete a task. I think it just gives you insight into how they're feeling at that particular time when you ask them to carry out a task. So body language is a good one to pay attention to as well, apart from just what they say.
Amazing. And tip number 9 is get an observer or note taker, asterisk if you are able to kind of find those resources. But many hands do make light work, and it's great if you can to get someone to kind of take the notes and transcribe the interview in the background as you conduct it. That way you get to be a lot more present because you're not focusing on asking the question and just trying to write down everything as fast as you can. You're really able to kind of, yeah, take note of their body language and really to be in the moment. I would advise that the person leading the interview also, you know, have a notebook, maybe a pen, be taking kind of casual notes. But it's also really powerful even in this kind of Zoom era to have the observer, you know, introduce themselves, say hi, but then turn their camera off and their microphone off. So you really still feel like it's a one-to-one interview, even though there is someone in the background on mute typing furiously.
Yeah, absolutely. I also think this is important so you don't kind of put your biases into the debrief later, which is number 10. I found this in my first project, but they were adamant about not sending anyone into an interview or alone, especially if they weren't able to record it, because it's very easy for us to kind of put meaning to answers, or if we're particularly attached to a specific outcome from a product, maybe disregard some of the answers, and we don't necessarily do it like to deceive anyone. It's just human nature. We probably go in without realizing with a wished for kind of outcome. So yeah, after all of this hard work, that's the last tip we have, almost.
Except for the bonus tip 11, which is leverage Siri for transcription. So if you are taking any notes during an interview, and you've got just like a bunch of scribbles in your notebook, or even if you've taken an audio recording, I have found in the past it's way faster to either read a line and repeat it into a blank email using Siri, the voice transcription, or if it's an audio medium, even just to like listen to the line and then feed that and just repeat that to your Siri and into the blank email, than it is to try to listen and then type or read and type. Just think it flows a bit more naturally that way. And that's probably the reason I was able to actually get through all my research in my undergraduate thesis. So thanks, Siri.
Such a good tip.
Yeah. Agreed.
And it's like, it's right there in your hand, basically.
Yeah.
So, Siri, thank you for being a true friend of the pod.
Absolutely. Should we talk about process then?
Yes, most
definitely. We love a good process and we love to stay organized. I think basically the next section of our pod is looking at the high level process of how to prepare and how to conduct a user interview. So we split this into three sections, first one being pre-interview. So before your interview, it's really good to do a little bit of preliminary research. Is there maybe some research that was done beforehand that if you familiarize yourself with, you might not have to ask the same amount of questions? Do you have a good strategy in place? So have you written your guide? Have you maybe prepared your Miro board to analyze everything after? All of those things are really, really, like, you spend a lot of time at the start doing them, but they're, you kind of, your future self thanks you for them. One important one, as Lauren said when she was doing her thesis, is to get ethics approval if necessary. Recruit, obviously. I would put an asterisk here and maybe kind of encourage you to think about the diversity of the people you're recruiting as well, making sure, from kind of following up on our accessibility episode, making sure that you get that every kind of user type is represented also in your kind of recruitment process. And obviously, schedule the interviews. I actually find this to be the worst part. I do not like
the logistics
nightmare. I know. I don't like scheduling anything. I don't like the back and forth of, are you free here? Are you free here? But yeah, like, if you can get someone else to do that for you, I think that's my top tip out of the whole episode.
Delegate. I was just going to say, actually, like, a tool like Calendly can be quite useful for that. So if you know roughly when you're free, what I tend to do is I just kind of like dump dates in an email, because I'm not allowed to use third party tools right now. Cries.
Yeah, that's a brilliant tip for when you can't delegate. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I normally just kind of round up all of the dates I'm free. I just like maybe pick about two or three more than the number of participants I'm recruiting, and then just kind of ask them to pick a 1 hour slot within a given time period. And fortunately, it's worked out well so far. So yeah, I mean, I feel your pain though. I would rather not have to schedule these interviews, but alas. Cool. And the next stage is to conduct the actual interview. So during the interview, once you have your interview guide in hand, you're now ready to speak to your interviewee. And generally what we tend to do, or what I tend to do at least, is just kind of run through the context of the interview with them. I think what Lavinia said just now about watching that video for how the pros do it, I think that's such a fab tip. From what I watched in that interview, or what I can remember, assuming it's the same video, the interviewee just kind of, you know, sets the context of what they're going to run through and just make sure the interviewee knows it's a semi-structured chat and it's quite informal. And I think that really helps to set the interviewee at ease. and just let them know, you know, that you might be recording the interview, just to make sure that they're okay with that, and let them know what you're going to do with the data afterwards. And during the interview as well, so just in terms of trying to ask as many open-ended questions as possible and giving the user a chance to speak, I think that's probably the most important thing. Ultimately, you just kind of want to hear what they have to say, so you're just there to facilitate the conversation. And I read somewhere that about like 80% of the interview should be what the user is saying, and then only that 20% is you kind of steering the user in the direction of where you want the conversation to be going. And something that I've, apart from just asking open-ended questions, I've heard that it's really effective to kind of keep drilling down into the why, to understand, you know, what the user's objective is for doing a certain thing in your product. So if you realize that there's something quite interesting to discuss, you can maybe push them a bit further and ask them, oh, why were you feeling that way? Or why did you do this? I think really just trying to drill down to the main reason for them, like, acting on something. So using a technique like asking lots of whys is quite useful for the interview.
I love how you inserted the 80-20 rule in there. I feel like it comes up everywhere. It's so good.
Oh yeah, it's the mystery of life. Or like, it's that magic number.
Yeah.
Amazing. And then in terms of steps for the post-interview, I think one of the most important things is the debrief. So immediately after the interview is over, it's especially great to do this if you've got the person leading the interview and then the observer who's been like taking notes. But equally, you can still do this if you conduct the interview alone. But it's really a chance to reflect on how the participant seemed, how their mood was, because obviously someone that's like very sad might not give you the same thing as someone who's really happy and excited to kind of share. It's also a great opportunity to flag any biases you may have noticed from the participant, and also a good opportunity to iterate on any questions, especially early on in the process. Like if there's a question where you ask the participants and they keep kind of asking for clarification, it might be worth going back and revising that question. And then of course, just reflecting on how you did and your tone and how you ask questions is always a great way to keep on improving. And then of course, as soon after the debrief as possible, it's great to get into the habit of putting the data into the synthesis template. So especially right after an interview, if you can even, if it's in a giant Excel sheet, if you can start bolding those really great sound bites, those quotes where you were like, oh, chef's kiss, this is amazing. Bold those. And then you can also just write a little note to yourself at the top of maybe that column in the Excel spreadsheet where you're putting all your data, and just write like the high level themes for that participant. You will thank your past self in the future when you're 20 interviews in, you come back and you're like, oh, thank God I wrote the shorthand notes of what this participant was all about. This has totally jogged my memory. And then, of course, there is processing your data. So you can use a variety of kind of skills and tools to do this. So one is a thematic analysis or qualitative data analysis. Of course, our good friend here at the pod, the rainbow chart, where you go through and you start kind of highlighting those themes. You write them in a list, and then each participant has a column, and you kind of color in the box in the relevant color for whichever themes are applicable. I really do owe all the Instagram followers a little infographic about how rainbow charts work. But ultimately, taking the masses and masses of data and distilling it down to something quite meaningful, and whether that's putting in a PowerPoint or into a written report, or just feeding back to the users, it's of course really important to get that narrative across. And speaking of getting narratives across, we've got our Hotline Design hotline caller for the week.
Hey, Hotline Design Hotline. I'm Adam, a product designer working in tech. I'm a long-time listener and a first-time caller. Recently, I've had a number of user interviews, but I always find it hard to recruit people. Any tips for getting me more participants?
Thank you so much for calling into the Hotline Design Hotline, Adam. So in terms of my top tips for recruiting, I love doing this thing called snowball sampling. And not only because I'm Canadian and am very familiar with the snow, but snowball sampling is essentially where you have a few participants, probably the ones that actually responded to your request for research. And at the end of the interview, you ask them if they can recommend anyone in their network. And that gives you a lot more kind of leverage when reaching out to the person. You can ask the first participant to introduce you. You can also mention that that person said that they'd be a good person to talk to. So it's really leveraging the power of people's existing networks to get a wider group of participants.
That's such a great tip. I don't know how to proceed from that. And also when you said, when you were talking about how people sometimes don't respond, I was just thinking, oh God, do they think it's like spam mail or something? They'll like create an email rule being like, delete as long as it contains the words user interviews.
Report as phishing.
Security training. Yeah, I think actually if you can afford it, what I've seen other places do, maybe not on the projects I've been on, but I saw these sponsored ads on Facebook and Instagram for taking part in user research. And I think one way that some of the bigger organizations like IDEO try to recruit participants is by offering incentives. And I think that's a really good way to try and get more people interested in user interviews. I think sometimes they offer you like cash or some vouchers for other places. I think, you know, if you do have the budget to do that, then that could also be a good way of getting more interest in your quest to find users for interviews. The flip side of that though is you might actually just get people who really want the Amazon vouchers or like the cash you're offering, and they might not actually care about giving you quality responses. One thing I've heard though is that if you do offer Amazon vouchers or cash as an incentive, then it can be a bit risky because you end up with people just kind of volunteering or signing up to your user interviews because they want that money, they want that coin, or they just want
dollar bill,
you know, they just want like that £20 or whatever you're offering in terms of Amazon vouchers. But what I think works quite well is if you come up with a pre-screening questionnaire and you ask them questions about, you know, their experiences with the product you're working on. And I think that just really helps with the quality of participants. You can kind of screen them through their answers in the questionnaire and also just kind of make sure that they hit the demographics of people you're interested in speaking to.
Some of my tips also include kind of screening or pre-screening. It's more kind of around surveys. So the same way Yusin was mentioning kind of pre-screening with interviews, you can also do that with surveys just to make sure that you're getting the sample that you're kind of like looking for. And one of the my kind of like close to heart, I guess, tips is to basically go to the department in your organization or in your client's organization that deals with customer support or maybe someone in marketing. I do remember that I used to be in one of these roles where I was managing the mailbox of a product. So I was always the one kind of solving queries, and we ended up needing some input. It wasn't really user research. It was more kind of like, yeah, a customer satisfaction survey, which I guess can be used for user research as well. But I immediately knew who the people who would be interested in helping us were, because there were kind of like highlight people who would basically email us saying that something is down, or email us to say, to ask for support on how to achieve a specific thing in the product. And yeah, I just knew that they would be really engaged and really interested to help us because they were using our product on a daily basis and kind of highlighting any problems very quickly. So yeah, that's probably a really kind of underused way of getting participants, because these people just deal with people all the time, and they know exactly who'd be willing to help. And then my last tip would be to kind of keep your participants engaged throughout the process. So, for example, if you are someone who participated in the IDEO survey, like Yusin did, you might actually be interested to figure out how that was used or how it helped. So keeping them engaged probably ensures that they might want to help you again in the future. So yeah, that's basically my tips.
Amazing. Well, Adam, thank you so, so much for calling in, and we hope those tips helped. And that about does it for our podcast this week. As always, you can call into the Hotline Design Hotline and submit a question at anchor.fm/hotlinedesignpod. You can also find us on Instagram at hotlinedesignpod. And then Gmail, as always, hotlinedesignpod@gmail.com. Thank you so much, and have an amazing week.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected. Please check the number and try your call again.